Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank? The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. It's all about panoramic volume and fully fanned out lashes. With its tapered brush, the new Panorama Mascara catches every single lash, giving you the false lash look without any of the hassle. Say goodbye to clumps and flakes, because this mascara is specially formulated to resist them all day with up to 24-hour wear. And the best part? It performs better than Luxe mascaras at only a fraction of the cost. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode brought to you by the following patrons: Min, Sex Caliber Bones a Lot, Madeline, Edward, Sunzi, Alyssa, Vixen, Holly, Natasha, Laura, Boezy, Jeremy, Allie, Mr. Ragebomb, Logan, Libby, Wes, Aaron, Kristen, Amy, Tia, Matthew, Jonathan, Isaac, and Karun. And all the patrons want you to know you're loved, you're listened to, and you're a valuable member of this awesome horror virgin community. And if you want to point a shotgun at a goat, join us in the Facebook group, where we'll be doing, I almost said weird stuff with goats daily, but we won't be doing that. But like, that part scared me.
I feel like this is the coolest sequel to The Pope's Exorcist that we could have gotten.
Only if we get Russell Crowe literally Vespa-ing across the water to Argentina.
I wouldn't be mad at it.
He would need his own little, like, special jet that the Avengers have.
Thank you for tuning into Horror Virgin. I'm Paige.
I'm Mikey.
And I'm your Horror Virgin, Todd, which means I don't like scary movies, but you guys make me watch them. And this week, you guys made me watch
When Evil Lurks.
Can I just pause right here and please cut this out? I am thinking right now is a scene where some terrorist tries to take over the Pope's plane, and then we get the Pope fighting him and kicking him off his plane. Anyway, I'm sorry. I'm literally, it's
like
Air Force One, but a Pope.
Get the hell off my plane! Yes.
But he's wearing the fish hat, like, you know what I'm saying?
Keep it
like,
in! The fish hat?
You know what I'm saying?
That is not a fish
hat. Yes, because he looks like the fish on SpongeBob with their mouths at the top.
Yes, it does.
Yeah. Like sardines in a can.
Get off my plane. I'm sentencing you to hell. All right, I'm so sorry. I'm not even sure what laugh lines worked, but like that was part of one of the laugh lines that either made it or didn't.
Keep it.
Apologies.
Who knows?
Okay. So, was this the first time either of you saw When Evil Lurks?
Yes, I waited.
I've been wanting to watch this. It's gotten a lot of good buzz. People love this movie. And I was like, oh, we got to do it.
Yeah.
People DM'd us a lot about it when it like was first out.
They said it was scary. So, I wanted to put, Paige and I pushed for it. And I will say, I dig it. It's cool.
Yeah.
It's not as scary as I want it to be. It's more scary for Paige. This kind of stuff scares Paige more than
this
me.
This movie scared me. I will rank this fairly, not crazy high. It's not Derba Logan, but like higher on the scariest scale than a lot of stuff.
I think you might rate it higher than me, although it'll be up there for me too. Yeah.
I feel like I miss some of the cultural. I think it's really cool. Like the Argentina myth, like got such a huge reception. That's really cool. I conceptualized it as like demonic fallen, where like if you kill the body, it inhabits the other body and starts killing people.
It is sort of like that, although I haven't seen all of Fallen, but it is sort of like what you just described.
Yeah, which I dug the unpredictability of it and like the feeling of unsafe, because people just drop dead all around these two dudes.
Or turn evil, sort of, just all, you know, like you don't really know who it's going to be next.
Which usually results in their death or the deaths of the people around them. Yeah.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah.
The way the demon went after this dude's kids by like just inhabiting the people around the kids to murder the kids around them was not, I did not see that coming.
Yeah.
Or animals.
Yeah.
And like it was wildly put me on edge.
Okay. This is the first time I saw it, obviously, right? And I was so mad for like the first 20 minutes of this movie.
You were anger texting us.
I was messaging you guys. I think I even said something like, does anyone start explaining anything that's going on? Because this is infuriating. But like something happens like 20 minutes in the movie, and I was on board the rest of the time, because it was bonkers. Although I will say this, I laughed at a lot of moments that I think you're supposed to be shocked and scared at. And I think the reason is I was so mad at the main character for not telling people early on in the movie what was going on, thereby telling the audience what was going on. I was like fucking annoyed with the main character. And like, listen, it's not his fault. Dude is a great actor.
I was annoyed to him from the beginning to the end. His brother, the younger brother, was like, I just feel bad for the younger brother.
I know. Like,
yeah,
you should.
He's kind of caught in the middle of it.
I think because I was so annoyed with the main character, I wasn't really scared if he died or not. Like, I did not care. So, like, whenever it, like the moment was tense, I was like, oh, maybe he's going to get it. Cool, whatever. So it wasn't as scary for me.
I liked it. I think I liked the other brother because I felt like he was just trying to go along with the weirdness that was happening. I think the main brother, I don't know if it's pride or hubris or not critical thinking ability, but he doesn't listen to anyone throughout the whole film and it's annoying. But I wanted them to explain more, like, because they like imply that the church is dead, and then they imply that these fixers maybe work for the government.
Oh, yeah. This is a post-religious world.
It's a completely, like, they do world build, and it's a completely different society than what we live in, but you don't find that out until like 20 minutes in.
And like, how does a church not exist if evil now is just everywhere and people know it? And that's wildly cool concept. And then like, what does this telescope do? I just have to know what the telescope does.
I have to know what they're doing with the Archimedes dial in this movie. Like, was Indiana Jones the cleaner? Like, how did they get that? And what does it do? It looks sort of like a sextant. Do you know what I'm talking about, Paige? Like that, like navigation thing?
It does look like a sextant. Yes.
So, like, I would have loved if this was the first episode of a True Detective style show, and we were gonna get like fucking 10 episodes of like this world, because I was like here for the weird. Oh, and I was also here for like crazy shit. Like when the thing that happened that made me flip like a switch to where I was like, this is going to be a wild ride. Let's fucking go. Was when the dog just snatched up that girl's face and dragged her down the street.
Yeah.
I was scared. I was like, oh my, but I like laughed.
It was a mix of shock, because it's so.
Yes. It was one of these. Oh, what the fuck? Yeah.
I think what I said was, oh my God. In my living room.
So like when I say I laughed multiple times in this movie, it was always that. It was always like a, oh my God, she's pulling his brains out through his head like that's the Dune popcorn bucket. Like, what is happening? Like, it is like that level of nuts.
And y'all know I like a film that kills all the kids and animals and makes you feel not safe.
I texted Mikey last night after I finished it, and I was like, Todd's going to barf during this movie, but Mikey is going to have so many dead kids.
I'm so sorry.
Oof.
I'm sure I'm sorry to bring it up, but I knew it was going to be a problem.
I'm not even joking. Like,
I know.
Thinking about, especially that last one, thinking about.
That's the one that I was like, fuck, that's the one that's going to get him.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Yeah.
Got to breathe in through my nose, out through my mouth. But Mikey, just like what you were saying about like, it's an Argentinian audience, you know what I'm saying? And there's a lot of, I think, baked in culture that I just don't have because I never experienced. So like it did feel like the world was super inaccessible to me, especially early on. And that's why I was like really frustrated that no one was explaining what's happening. But I think, Paige, you did some research on like that stuff, right?
I did.
Can I add one thought before?
Sure. Yeah.
Yep.
Because I feel like the budget constricted their vision. I feel like at one point it was going to be like the crazies where like the possession had infected the whole town.
I think they set that up. Oh, yes.
Because they're like, the lights are up and we also had to get out of town. Everyone's going to go start killing each other.
Everyone's got to get out of town.
That's interesting. I read it differently. So like in my mind, it was like a... It's like a cancer cluster that happens in rural areas because like chemical companies that make pesticides or whatever like dump into rivers and like
that is exactly what this is based on. Like there's okay. an actual
specific
yes, yes.
Oh my god,
there is a specific problem in rural Argentina with the chemical compound that is basically Roundup.
Okay, so interestingly enough,
yes.
my granddad did that line of work. Worked at a mm-hmm. company called Ciba Geigy for his whole career. And they literally have had to pay out like $300 million lawsuits and stuff. I actually had a friend who just sent me an article about one that happened in New Jersey. He was like, is this your granddad? And I was like, yep.
Mm-hmm.
So like, that's why I was thinking about that specifically. That's wild. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it feels like that because it goes through the families
yes.
because it's usually rural areas that it happens in.
Right.
And then it like really hyper focuses on the kids because their like immune systems can't handle the like cancer-causing stuff as much as, like, their parents can.
Well, and early in the movie, they're very worried about it poisoning the land, which was kind of weird until I read about the Roundup stuff.
Yeah, that's so wild. I 100% thought that was just, like, a Homer LeBaron ancestry, like, projection on this movie. That's wild. Okay.
No.
Sorry. Anyway, please continue.
Yeah, I found an interview with the director where he talked about that specifically.
No shit.
But
okay.
also... Yeah, no, because they say the lights are out and one of the rules is that you can't use electric lights around them. So I took that to mean because we know that like it hit the town and it hit a lot of people because within what we see, it looks like even if you just witness some of the evil, it clusters out. So from him leaving town, I imagined it spread immediately and badly.
Yeah.
And so when later when she's like, the lights are out, that to me meant like, everyone has tried to go to ground to avoid this because, yeah, no, go ahead. Question.
Well, I was going to say, she says that like they're following the protocols, you know, like
they're following the protocols
because everyone in town knows the song, right? That we don't get
yes.
until 50 minutes into this movie that explains anything. But,
well, but when we got that song, I suddenly, I'm a cryptid nerd. And as a cryptid nerd, I was like, oh my God, it's these things that I was like, that's why. So I will go into most of it in fun facts because I think the movie, although it delays that knowledge, when we do get it, I do think it's pretty comprehensive in what it tells us and what we need to know for the story. The things that we don't know are like essentially the like government agents tasked with murdering demons. And that's the part that I'm like, give me a whole movie of it.
like, no, or like a whole like True Detective style like
yes.
miniseries, like HBO series, because like I really love the two main brother characters, you know?
Who are these cleaners?
Yeah, who are the cleaners? Yeah, it's very much like it's Argentinian Supernatural is how I've been describing it.
And I never seen Supernatural.
It's a blast.
This makes me want to see that.
The first four seasons are very, very good.
Yes, okay. yes. But it's also a show that like you can drop in on at any time and like... You don't need to know what's overarching going on. It's a good time regardless.
The creator of the show, Todd, had like a 4 or 5 year plan.
Yes.
Okay.
And then it ended up going for 11 seasons.
Nice.
No, it's on season 15 or 16 now.
Yeah, it's...
It was still on TV up until recently.
A lady I used to work with once described it as a MILF thirst show. And so I decided to never watch it.
Oh, no. It's amazing. It's so much fun. It's basically... It's similar to, it's also why I like Ash versus Evil Dead, because I feel like Ash versus Evil Dead is a slightly bloodier version of Supernatural,
okay.
where it's just monster of the week, and they just like kill a new guy every week.
It's like a procedural.
Yeah, but in the later seasons, they're like, also, all of the different gods have to have a quorum, and we're going to battle with hell, and you're like, what the fuck?
There were some power creep issues in the later seasons, it seems.
It was nuts. It ended in 2020 on its 15th season. So, like, it's a wild show. It's still in syndication. You can find Supernatural in reruns almost as often as you can find Law and Order.
Yeah, because those are 22 episode seasons. There's so many episodes of that show.
I have, whenever I go to hotels, which is too often.
I do this too. We've talked about this.
Things that I look for on hotel TV because I know they're always there.
Yeah.
And it's either Law and Order or Supernatural. And I'm like, this is fine for me.
For me, if I'm in my room, I am watching Law and Order SVU or whatever Law and Order is on.
It's almost always SVU. Yeah.
Or I'm FaceTiming Natalie. Like, that's what I'm doing if I'm in my hotel room. That's it. Anyway, is there more lore, Paige?
Oh, yeah. No, there is. And we will get to more of the lore in fun facts. But what I do want to touch on is this pulls from a couple different types of lore from Greater South America, but also Argentina. Specifically, Argentina and Uruguay have very similar lore, where things like a werewolf, and not specifically werewolf, but like werewolf and possession and a bunch of other things are kind of lumped together into these kind of demon-possessed cryptid folklore tales.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I think is really interesting when you look at like South American werewolves versus the werewolf stories that we have in the United States, which are largely based on Germanic folklore, is that our werewolf stories are much more similar to the stories that we get from small villages in Europe, but also combined with the stories of the indigenous peoples of our country, where those stories are largely based on cannibalism and hunger. So it's the story that reflects the terror of winter, the fear of starvation, which were very real fears for people at the time. However, in South America, it's much less a cannibalism story as much as it is an infection story, where it's more like you're trying to stop.
It's like that in this movie for sure.
You're trying to stop the spread of the infection. So it's almost more like a zombie, but with demon possession. And that's what we get in this movie.
So you think this is more like Southern Hemisphere werewolf? Is that what you're saying?
So the reason I bring up werewolf is that's one of the cryptids, and there are many different names for them. I'll bring up some fun facts that function in the same way of like, there are seven different rules. You have to do this and this. You're probably
going to
die. You're probably going to need this. It is a demon.
It is. They definitely say that.
Yeah. And it's a very different vibe from what we see.
It's a pusser, or what is it? You puss up?
No, they're rotten.
Rotten.
Which I do think is great.
It is great.
Terminology. Like, to just be like, he's rotten.
And also the way that that guy looked, like, that's why I was like, oh, this is like pesticide-y and like chemically, and like that stuff leaks out of his face and shit.
Yes.
That's why I started thinking about that. That's wild that like that's
that. But that is very real, because it's not as regulated in Argentina as it is in the United States, in part because, you know, who knows? They have a different ecosystem, different farming, a whole different thing. But it is becoming a problem. And so the director actually visited rural communities and noticed that like so many people were sick. And he kind of folded that in to this story.
Wild.
I do at some point really want to do the movie he did before this. Mikey and I talked about it earlier today. That movie is called Terrified, and it's a haunted house movie.
It looks scary. Yeah, it looks scary.
Yeah. It's all jump scares.
So, okay. I think that would get me way more than this movie did. That's why I think like this movie, I think, more focuses
this
on the kind of scary that gets you, right?
Yeah. And,
but this still very much scared me. Please don't take that way. But like,
no, for sure.
I do think that premise sounds way scarier. Like jump scary, haunted house, I'm out.
Yeah.
I think it looks great for probably a smaller budget. I think he frames shots really well too. I really liked how he directs.
I think this is shot beautifully. Yeah. This is shot really, really well. And even at night, because there's a lot that goes on at night, and it's shot really well for night shoots, which we talk about on this show all the time, is hard to do.
It is.
I think for me, part of the reason this scares me so much is a big fear of mine is desperate people doing desperate things. But also
it's the title of my autobiography.
I know. The callous brutality of this movie really gets to me.
Yeah.
I've talked a lot about how gore doesn't really bother me, which is why like torture porn doesn't really bother. Like, I'm not as interested in it because it's a lot of like, oh, look, we're going to cut this thing. Blood gush.
We're going to chop this dude's foot off with piano wire or whatever.
Yeah. What's so much scarier to me is what this movie does, which is everything is going fine, and then a woman is bludgeoned to death with a hammer completely emotionlessly. Holy fuck, that's terrifying.
Yeah, or when his ex-wife gets run over by her now husband.
By her husband, and the little girl warned. Ooh, but also when, so that dog bites that little girl, drags her to the table.
I lost my mind.
And the initial bite is scary, yes, right?
Yes.
What's way scarier to me, and the part that made me literally gasp and be like, oh my God, this is one of the worst things I've ever seen in a movie, is when the dog is basically shaking her lifeless body
under
to death
table.
Under the table.
Yeah. Paige.
I'm chills just thinking about
That's literally when I was like, fuck it. No, I love this movie. There are no holds being barred, and I am here for this. It is insane.
The attitude in which this movie does those things is very much just like, evil is here, evil is real, you cannot run from it, and it does not care who you are, it has no emotion about it, it will just take you out. Much like pesticides.
And also religion doesn't exist, because that is like the answer in possession movies.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that, because that's such a fascinating piece.
So I love that that's not in the movie.
It's such an interesting choice.
It's such an interesting choice, because, and we don't know 100% about why, right? We know that our main character doesn't really believe in it. And then when we meet our, you know, Father Amort later, basically... She's like, no, I had a church and we were con artists. And then lo and behold, this was fucking real. And we had no idea how to fight it. And I guess if religion comforts you, great. But we got to go stab this thing with a fucking telescope. And you're like, what? Why?
I
don't know.
We got to fuck its face with a sextant.
Yeah.
I don't know how essentially they were going to kill it with that. Did they like reflect the moonlight through it? Because it did have lenses.
She's like doing calculations. I was like, I've got to see this thing work at some point. And I was like, cock tease.
It is Archimedes' dial from Indiana Jones. It's like that vibe.
So it has a spear in it that she was going to launch. And she said, I need to get him on the nape, which I took to mean.
Like his neck.
The neck.
Yeah.
Which, if you've seen him, he has like a big sore on his neck where it looks like that's the place where it first started, much like a tumor, because cancer.
Yeah.
And so like, I think she needed to shoot him in the neck tumor. I think that's what it was supposed to be. And she also, even with all that, is like, it might not work. Like, we thought we killed that one, but then maybe this guy's coming for me. Maybe it's the same guy and he's coming. And you're just like, what the fuck is this woman's life?
I
need a prequel.
Yeah.
Like, who is she? Why?
I definitely would take the prequel where she refers to the person who teaches her how to be a cleaner as the monk or a monk.
Yes.
If that monk is just like 1960s Russell Crowe as Father Amort's, like, this can be a shared universe. And want that badly.
But I would say overall, I did feel like the first 20 minutes was a little inaccessible, but again, I think that was because we are not the audience, right?
Exactly.
It was meant for an audience that understood some of these more subtle themes and allusions that we had to then go look up after, right? And I think this movie, even though those first 20 minutes, you're kind of like, what the fuck is going on? When they do tell it, when they're eventually like, here's what's going on, you're like, oh shit, I'm in 100%.
When they're driving away in the car and the grandmother tells it the 6 of the 7 rules.
Yes.
We don't get the last one until later. I was like, oh shit, this is what's going on? Good God.
And that last one is brutal.
Yeah.
But I feel like if you've tried to watch this movie and you got like 20 minutes into it and you're like, what is this? I am not into this. Keep watching. Keep watching. It gets so much better.
Yeah. I literally was not enjoying, like, I did not like the movie at all until 20 minutes in when the shit hits the fan. And you're like, okay, holy shit, no one's safe.
Yeah, no one is safe.
It's going to be a balls to the wall, like, crazy ride.
Yeah.
And it is.
I mean, it's a slow, it's such a creepy vibe on the whole thing.
It is.
It is paced well, though, too. It's only like 100 minutes long. It's really well done.
Well, and it kicks off, like, they hear, like, the first thing you hear is gunshots. And then it's two brothers, like, going to stand out in front of their property. Like
4 deaths in the first 5 to 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Four.
The movie moves. Like, I don't think it's slow at all. I think it's a little inaccessible because I just grew up in a different culture than the movie is meant for.
Right.
But like, once you learn what's going on, it's nuts from then on.
Yes.
Whew. Yeah.
Yeah. It actively made me want to watch this dude's other movies. I was just like, holy shit. Like, we've been sleeping on this shit.
You know, I'm not big on nihilism. The ending's a little dark.
Sure. And yes. And agreed. But I'm still fucking here for it.
Okay. So this also made me think about the pesticides thing, because evil often does win in those situations. Like, the corporations will pay a fine that they consider cost of doing business for destroying families and like killing people with cancer and poisons and pesticides. And then they will like walk by and like put a red handprint on your head, like they're about to raise you up on Pride Rock. And then they're going to walk off into this bloody sunset.
Yeah. Well, and when this movie ends with essentially the birth of a Crowleyan moon child, I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Like, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
And so it was so crazy that the nihilism, I was like, yeah, I don't know how else you could have ended that.
Well, I think that's part of it. So like, I think there is the cancer cluster thing that I guess got lucky and guessed right.
Yeah.
But I think there's also like an apathy from the state perspective about what's going on with the, like, the populace, especially the like lower class populace, like the more rural and, you know, less privileged.
Right.
But I also think there is like
Argentina just got a big libertarian thing going on over there right now. They had a new president and he's like an interesting person.
I don't know enough about it to talk about.
Thanks for the update.
But like, poverty has risen like 30% since he got elected president. And he looks wild from like straight from 1972.
I forgot what I was going to say.
Anyway, he believes in very small government who's not coming to save you from possessed demons taking over your city.
Which is what we see in this film. Like, when they, because that's the other thing. This movie exists in a world where the government knows about demon possessions and devil babies and is like, we'll send someone around to get to it.
Well, Ruiz,
that's so
the
crazy.
Landowner was like, they're not coming to help because they want my land. And I was like, that's,
yeah, ooh.
Is that true? Is that, that's a jump maybe.
Eminent domain.
I mean, he might be wrong, but I don't know. Like, he might also be right.
Who's to say?
It did take the government a year to send somebody. Now, I realize that Cleaner gets killed like the very beginning of the movie, but like, it did take him a fucking year to get out there, you know?
Well, and when we find out what eventually happened to him, I thought that was really interesting, too. Anyway, should we just dive in and talk about the movie?
Yeah, let's just jump into the movie, because that happens. That's like what kicks off the movie.
And also, my notes are a little sparse because I was too busy being like, what the fuck? So, you know, just a heads up for that. Anywho, we open late night on a farm. Two brothers hear noises outside, and they go to check it out. They don't really see anything, but they are hearing what sounds like vicious animals like ripping things apart. So they kind of post up outside their farmhouse, guns drawn, waiting for something to come get them.
More or less, yeah. They're like just protecting themselves and their like house from whatever's going on. Because they do hear gunshots, right? So like, he even says, I heard two shots and then a break and then three shots. And it was a revolver, not a rifle. So it's not a hunter. It was like that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And then you start to hear the animal noises and they just stand outside holding like shotguns more or less.
Yeah.
And then I think it's Pedro says to his brother, like, we'll wait till dawn or whatever. Like, we're not going to go into the forest to go see what that is until we've got like overhead lighting. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, of course not.
It did make me feel thankful for like, we live in a country where like you can call people for that. No matter where you live in this country, you're like, hey, I heard a lot of gunshots. Please, you know.
I mean, in most places in this country, I think there's definitely places where you might have to stand out there until the morning.
Yeah.
You know? Anyway, so the next day they do go out looking to see what has happened, and they do find a dismembered body, and it's literally sliced in half with something sharp. We will never find out exactly what sliced him in half.
No, we don't.
But we do find him next to a suitcase full of gold tools that looks like the, you know, it looks like a sextant. It looks like the dial of destiny. It looks like, you know, a time turner. Like it's,
yeah,
some sort of circle gold thing.
I don't know if you noticed this when they when they're going through it and they find like the documentation that's inside of it and stuff, and you see like the case that it's in. There's a Father Amort, like
just extra bottles of holy water.
It says Father Amort is on the side. That's what it is.
That was the first thing I thought as I was like, oh, demon killing kit. And I was like, oh, I don't understand what's happened, but I'm in.
I didn't know this at this point, but what it actually is a demon abortion kit.
Ooh,
yes. Nope. Yes. Because you have to kill. Well, you have to like stop the process before the moon child is born.
Yes.
Wild.
Mikey, Paige and I are just talking sex magic. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, yeah. No, we're over here just talking about thelemic principles.
Look, that's fine.
It's part of the left-hand path.
I'm going to need you to strip down, get a knife, and start coming on triangles.
Mikey, your face, although accurate, lets me know you really don't know what we're talking about. And honestly, your life is better for it.
I mean, Victor, I like the church, all that culty stuff. That's fine.
Hey, without that shit, we wouldn't be on the moon. And that's real.
That is real. That's Jet Propulsion Labs.
Shout out JPL. Yeah. What's up? Anyway.
Johnny Parsons?
Yes. Jack Parsons. John was his father's name and he hated it. So he went by Jack. Anyway. The folder of information that they find with it is for their neighbor that lives on like the neighboring parcel of land. And so they go to see her and they're like, hey, were you waiting for somebody? Because they ain't gonna make it.
Yeah.
We found them super dead in the field, so they're not coming.
Well, we found their legs.
We found their legs. Well, and the rest of the body is kind of off scattered around, but
we had to stop our dog from like eating it a ton, but it's still out there.
Yeah. Oopsie daisies.
Yeah.
And she's like, yeah, that guy was supposed to come kill my son, Uriel. And you're like, what?
I know. That's a weird way to kick off a conversation.
Right?
I don't think it was kill. I think it was cure. Because they like, don't kill them.
No, she says kill.
Oh, well, maybe they have to be killed in a certain way.
Yes, they do. Because if you shoot them especially, like, shit's going to kick off. But yeah, you're not even supposed to harm them, which we don't find out until the song, really.
Or you're not supposed to move them. You're not supposed to take the things that they want.
Yeah.
Which will apply to anyone touched by them. Because I think that's part of what happens with the mom. It's like you took the things that she most wanted and it breeds on your fear. You were afraid this would happen and so it happened.
Yeah.
Self-perpetuation in a way. So they go in to see Uriel and holy crap, has Mike Myers' character from that third Austin Powers movie let himself go.
You're thinking of Fat Bastard Page.
Indeed. I believe that was his name.
Yes.
And like does, Fat Bastard, he has a baby in his belly.
It's a demon baby, but yeah.
It's a demon baby.
He ate Werner Herzog or whatever that guy's name was.
Vern Troyer, who is dead. But
oh, he died?
Yes.
That's sad. I'm so sorry.
I just like in this world, men and women can both get pregnant. And so like it's like an equal rights kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, yeah, Uriel looks bad. Uriel looks like the most terrifying episodes of shows on TLC.
He looks like Pizza the Hut.
He does. He even leaks like ooze. It's so gross.
He's like Lone Star.
The worst part for me is he's wearing tidy whities that are like stained yellow.
All tidy whities get there eventually, Paige.
What?
I know, but it definitely looks like pussy, gross diarrhea that's just pooling. I'm so sorry, Todd.
Fuck.
The body horror in this is rough.
It's so rough, man. Like the body horror doesn't really do it a lot for me. There are almost no jump scares in this movie, and I'm going to rate it high because the body horror is fucking good.
Yeah.
And I hated it.
Well, they clap eyes on Uriel and are like, oh no, this is fucking bad.
Yeah.
And so they go to the police and they're like, police, hey, Uriel is possessed. He looks bad. And also we found a dead guy in the ground.
Yeah.
You guys can cut this. But first they told Uriel, Gilbert's up on that water tower again. You can't get him down.
No, Mikey!
Oh my
they
God.
Do say that they should have burned the house down around him. They do mention that. Which, hey, that's not the right way to treat people in this situation. Get them help. But that's what they're trying to do. And the police are just like, whatever. Like, I will send a guy.
They just ignored that there's half a body. They're like, there was a murder.
Yeah.
It's a Tuesday.
How many murders? Like, come back when there's two murders.
But yeah, like, the guy who runs that police station or whatever, because it looks like there's only two dudes that work there.
Yeah.
But like the one that's like a higher rank clearly is like,
right.
Listen, all we do in this situation is alert the proper authorities. which I get the vibe isn't the police. It's like the cleaning service, whatever that is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which, like, I really hope they flesh out in episode two of this awesome season that we're hopefully going to get.
Or some sort of comic book. Yes.
Thank you. Yes. But, like, I don't know who they call, but they call someone and they handle it. Like, the police don't even handle it. So in his mind, he's like, the guy who died, the cleaner who died, that's on the cleaning department. Like, they're going to handle it. I'm not going to do shit for you. So, like, leave.
Well, and then you find out that, like, the cops hate this dude.
Oh, because they think, and maybe he did, try and do something very terrible.
He did, because he admits it later.
Oh, that's right.
Because it's kind of underlying for the whole movie where they're like, oh, did a mistake? Are you crazy?
Yeah.
Because we will find out that he tried to kill his entire family with carbon monoxide poisoning.
Yes.
Is what happened.
Possibly because he found out his wife was cheating on him.
Yes.
That also might be a lie because she's not a reliable narrator at that point. But
yeah, we have no idea.
Yeah.
I do think that the demon knows it.
Yes.
And kills his whole family in front of him as like a really good torture.
I think so too. Yeah.
But I do love that the cops are just like, hey, stop it. We're trying to watch our stories. Like, they're just like,
right?
Not. And but I think that's also the callousness with which the authorities treat the rural people impacted by those cancer causing chemicals. It's just like, ugh, again, you again.
Yeah.
Like, more tumors, whatever, you know, it's not a tumor.
Yeah. Like, oh, more rotten. That hasn't happened here in ages. Like, the one who's like, obviously a lower rank police officer is like, that could never happen here, bro. Like, just get the fuck out or whatever. Like,
yeah.
complete denial about what's going on.
Well, and I love that they call it a rotten and that, like, that's the word they use because it is evocative of like your crops going rotten, things rotting.
Yes.
Things infecting other things, things turning other things rotten. I think that terminology is great.
Me too.
And I'm sure the word is different in Spanish, but in good job on the subtitles, I guess, because I thought that was actually very, very well picked.
Yeah.
So they decide to go to their neighbor. They're like, hey, Ruiz, this is what's going on. Ruiz is like, well, let's kill it now. Like, let's immediate. Which also, I was fully ready for him to shoot Uriel and to have a balloon of pus explode in that room. Like, I thought for sure that was what was going to happen.
Paige, please believe I covered my face. I was very afraid that was going to happen. Because when Ruiz hears about what's going on, he, like, goes to their place. Not immediately. Yeah. He thinks about it for a bit. We see that. But, like,
sure.
He almost immediately, as far as the story time is concerned, goes over there with a shotgun and is like, get out of my face, motherfuckers. I'm going to kill your son/brother, right?
Right.
Insane.
That's your responsibility, Todd, if someone's rotting on your land. I mean, you did not read your mortgage contract.
I clearly did not.
I can't paint my house pink. I can't shoot rottens in my house.
Man, this HOA sucks.
Anyway, so Ruiz is like, I'm going to go kill this guy. And his pregnant wife is like, please don't. And he's like, fine, I won't. Shh. And then immediately goes. So his wife goes against the two brothers and they're like, oh God. So they go there. Uriel is still alive. Ruiz didn't kill him, but Ruiz is like, we need
work there.
Yeah.
But like the one that's like a higher rank clearly is like,
right.
Listen, all we do in this situation is alert the proper authorities. Which I get the vibe isn't the police. It's like the cleaning service, whatever that is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which, like, I really hope they flesh out in episode two of this awesome season that we're hopefully going to get.
Or some sort of comic book. Yes.
Thank you. Yes. But, like, I don't know who they call, but they call someone and they handle it. Like, the police don't even handle it. So in his mind, he's like, the guy who died, the cleaner who died, that's on the cleaning department. Like, they're going to handle it. I'm not going to do shit for you. So, like, leave.
Well, and then you find out that, like, the cops hate this dude.
Oh, because they think, and maybe he did, try and do something very terrible.
He did, because he admits it later.
Oh, that's right.
Because it's kind of underlying for the whole movie where they're like, oh, did a mistake? Are you crazy?
Yeah.
Because we will find out that he tried to kill his entire family with carbon monoxide poisoning.
Yes.
Is what happened.
Possibly because he found out his wife was cheating on him.
Yes.
That also might be a lie because she's not a reliable narrator at that point. But
yeah, we have no idea.
Yeah.
I do think that the demon knows it.
Yes.
And kills his whole family in front of him as like a
really good torture.
I think so too. Yeah.
But I do love that the cops are just like, hey, stop it. We're trying to watch our stories. Like, they're just like,
right?
Not. And but I think that's also the callousness with which the authorities treat the rural people impacted by those cancer causing chemicals. It's just like, again, you again.
Yeah.
Like more tumors, whatever, you know, it's not a tumor.
Yeah. Like, oh, more rotten. That hasn't happened here in ages. Like the one who's like, obviously a lower rank police officer is like, that could never happen here, bro. Like, just get the fuck out or whatever. Like,
yeah.
complete denial about what's going on.
Well, and I love that they call it a rotten and that like, that's the word they use because it is evocative of like your crops going rotten, things rotting.
Yes.
Things infecting other things, things turning other things rotten. I think that terminology is great.
Me too.
And I'm sure that the word is different in Spanish, but in good job on the subtitles, I guess, because I thought that was actually very, very well picked.
Yeah.
So they decide to go to their neighbor. They're like, hey, Ruiz, this is what's going on. Ruiz is like, well, let's kill it now. Like, let's immediate. Which also, I was fully ready for him to shoot Uriel and to have a balloon of pus explode in that room. Like, I thought for sure that was what was going to happen.
Paige, please believe I covered my face. I was very afraid that was going to happen. Because when Ruiz hears about what's going on, he, like, goes to their place. Not immediately. Yeah. He thinks about it for a bit. We see that. But, like,
sure.
He almost immediately, as far as the story time is concerned, goes over there with a shotgun and is like, get out of my face, motherfuckers. I'm going to kill your son/brother, right?
Right.
Insane.
That's your responsibility, Todd, if someone's rotting on your land. I mean, you did not read your mortgage contract.
I clearly did not.
I can't paint my house pink. I can't shoot rottens in my house.
Man, this HOA sucks.
Anyway, so Ruiz is like, I'm going to go kill this guy. And his pregnant wife is like, please don't. And he's like, fine, I won't. Shh. And then immediately goes. So his wife goes against the two brothers and they're like, oh God. So they go there. Uriel is still alive. Ruiz didn't kill him, but Ruiz is like, we need to get him away from our land. We need to do it. And so they decide that they're going to move him and dump him 300 miles away. Which just infects a new place, but like at least it's not their place.
So I think the dumping thing is what initially made me think of the like cancer clusters, right? Because that's like what Siva Geigy got in a lot of trouble for, is they dumped like shitloads of toxins into like rivers that were used for drinking water and like swimming and shit like that. Yeah. Anyway, sorry. That's what made me think that initially.
No, for sure. But what we do see in this scene is they're like trying to drag him out of the house. Is everyone gets a little bit on them.
Would you guys have ever done this?
No. God, no. I would have just left.
Same. 100%.
I would have driven to go get my kids and left, you know?
Yeah.
But I would not have moved the person. I'd have been like, no. Nope. No, I'm not doing that. Bye.
And I would have left the night before.
Same.
I would have been like, hey, Ruiz, there's one of these, but we're out.
Hey, you got a rotten special on whole grain gross ass bed, so enjoy that, but I'm leaving.
Yeah, burn that mattress and then burn the ashes. Like, it's oof. So they go with Ruiz and they drive out, but all of a sudden they swerve because there's a kid in the road.
Oh my God.
And as they swerve, they accidentally dump the body and they think it was about 20 minutes back. And so they're like, do we go back and get it? No, the job is done.
Yeah, it's that town's problem. Don't worry about it. And it very clearly is like a town that they just like dropped them off in, because that kid was on like a paved street. There were houses like the kid shouldn't have been in the middle of the street. Sure. But like it's a residential area where they stop and realize it.
It's a rural residential area. But yeah.
Yeah. But it's like a suburb, maybe, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, it's like that sort of thing. But when they stop and realize they dumped it already, it's like dirt road. Like it's very rural. So they're like pretty far away.
Yeah. They're like, oh, well.
Yeah.
So they go home and the two brothers sit up all night and they're like, yeah, I think we got to just leave. Like, I don't think we'll leave in the morning, but like, I don't think we took care of it. I think it's better if we just go.
Yeah.
But as they're deciding that, who should show up to the door but Uriel's younger brother, who says, my mom is gone. I don't know where she went. I can't find her. I'm very, very cold. Please give me a place to stay.
Yeah.
They do not invite him in. Vampire rules.
Right.
They make him stay in the barn and they take his gun and dump out how many bullets are in it. And it is a revolver and there's one bullet missing.
Yeah.
The implication, I think, being that he shot the mom. Most likely.
I think so. Yeah.
We never confirm it, but I would say I'm 99.999% sure.
Well, doesn't he say later he eats the mom?
He ate pieces of her, yeah.
Yeah.
But he also ate pieces of the cleaner.
Mikey, yeah, I think, yes. That is one of the things we learn.
Yeah.
Well, and we see other people do that as well, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll get to it towards the end. So the next morning, they get up. They're packing up to leave. Meanwhile, the next morning at Ruiz's house, his wife sees that one of their goats seems off. And she believes that it is the spirit of the rotten in that goat. And at first you're like, this is fucking nuts. But Ruiz goes out there with a shotgun, cocks it and fires into the air, a warning shot. The herd scatters except for that one goat, and he holds that gun and the goat walks up to it like, fucking shoot me, bro.
I thought that was wild.
Oh my God.
Shoot me, bro. It was nuts.
It was like, bitch, you better don't with that shotgun.
Yeah.
Although Ruiz does, though. Like, he does.
Does thou shoot maliciously?
Yeah. Wouldst thou like to Glock maliciously?
But Ruiz does, though, because he shoots him in the face.
In the face.
It's bad.
Bad. Mm-hmm. This is the thing that this sets up what we will see through the rest of the movie, which is not only should you not shoot a rotten with gunpowder because it will jump person to person, but also if you witness someone doing it, it also infects you. It causes like a chain.
Yeah.
Because Ruiz shoots his wife, who is holding an axe and was basically going to be like, no, kill the goat with the axe because it doesn't have gunpowder.
Right.
She, as soon as Ruiz shoots, she gets Ruiz in the head with the axe.
Yeah.
And then uses the axe to cave in her own face.
Yeah, she turns the axe on herself.
Yeah.
Oh.
She axes herself a question. And the question is, wouldst thou like to live maliciously?
Well, since he died, she couldn't live without her axe.
Oh, because he's the axe.
Yes.
I liked it.
Anyway, this scene's kind of creepy for me because I feel like the effects of her axing herself
were
better than I was anticipating they would be.
Me too.
Same.
Honestly, all of the body horror stuff in this is way better than I was used to and expecting.
I was like, oh, wow. And she was pregnant. So right away, I was like, oh, this movie's not going to pull any of the punches.
It did not pull any punches.
Nope.
No punches were pulled. Like, no holds were barred, I think is what I said earlier. And I, especially when the dog thing happens, I was like, oh, my God.
Yeah. So the next morning, the brothers leave. They go into town to get the older brother's kids. Now, it is a contentious meeting with his children's stepfather, his ex-wife's husband. And we learn that there's a restraining order in place, that he left for a long amount of time and hadn't seen them. It's not good. And add to that, he just strips down in the middle of their kitchen.
Yeah.
Because he's like, burn these clothes. I get rid of them. But before they can get rid of those clothes, the dog sniffs them. So he gets a change of clothes. The dog is suddenly, and it's a bulldog. It's kind of like everywhere all at once. And then it's just sitting very quietly.
Yeah.
Like, a clear change. But so the brother goes up the stairs to wake up his oldest son. His younger son, Santino, is around, and his younger sister, Vicky, who I don't think is our main character's daughter, but she is a sibling to the other two. I think it's the stepfather and ex-wife's daughter, Vicky.
Okay, so I got the vibe that it was the stepfather's daughter from a different marriage.
No, I'm pretty sure it's still the ex-wife's daughter.
Because the son, the younger son, that is Pedro's, is younger than that daughter, right?
No, I think he was older. She was like toddler. She was like toddlery.
Yeah, she's very little. Because
you notice when the dog is jerking her body around, and she's Chucky size.
You're right.
Well, we'll get to it. We'll get to it.
Jesus.
They are fully arguing. And as the adults are arguing, the little girl gets too close to the dog. And the dog's just been sitting there the whole time. And this is a pet in the household. So like the little girl is like, hi, doggy. Like it's her friend. And that dog just viciously attacks her, drags her under the dining room table and shakes her to death. And you watch and it's fucked up.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God. Well,
she lives.
No, she don't.
She does not, Mikey.
She is not alive.
No, the daughter.
That is ghost daughter. That daughter dies twice that we see.
That daughter's a demon from here on out.
That daughter is fully a demon from here on out. Because you watch the dog shake her to death under the table. It is brutal. And then the dog just takes off running out into the street with her body as the younger son screams. So the dog takes off. And at this point, the older brother is like, oh, that's a demon dog. And this is about to be bad. So he collects his sons, Yair, who is the older son who has autism.
Yeah.
And Santino, the younger son, who is maybe six or seven. He's very young.
Yeah, he's pretty young.
He gets Yair to tell him where the keys are so that they can steal his ex-wife's car.
Absolutely.
He piles them into the car.
She's not going to need it.
Yeah, not going to need it. And as that's happening, he kind of takes off after the stepfather to be like, hey, please don't shoot that dog. Not with the gun. Like, oh no.
Yeah.
And watches as the stepfather's about to do it. He turns so he doesn't see it and heads back to the house, piles everyone into the car. As he's stealing the car, the little girl shows back up seemingly completely unharmed.
It's nuts. Can I say this really quick?
Yep.
Because I think it's a part of like the apathy stuff of the movie. He does like run down on a cop and is like, this is going on, it's insane. And those cops are like, bro, you're not supposed to be here, your ex has a restraining order against you. And he's like, a dog just dragged a girl down the street, cop, like, do something about that. And they're like, are you having a break? Like, are you all right? And the cops,
they drive off in the other direction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The cops don't even check out the very like plausible story that he is like heightened about.
Yep.
It's insane.
Well, because the mom and the dad, the stepdad would have told them. But like, since the kid was fine, they're like, oh, she's fine.
Well, this is before the kid comes back because the dog had just dragged her down the street.
They do end up there because the mom has now called them.
Eventually. Yeah.
Yeah. So they do end up there. The little girl seems fine, but then she pulls her mom close and whispers, dad is going to kill you with the car. He's going to drive up here and he's going to kill you with the car. And you're like, oh my God. And the mom is just like, I'm just glad you're okay. Like,
yeah,
you know, kids be saying spooky shit. I haven't had a chance to check the thread again today in the Facebook group.
It's already started.
Yeah. But it's already started. And I'm excited for all the spooky child stories.
That episode doesn't come out till tomorrow for anyone who's not on Patreon. And it's already started, Paige.
I'm very excited. Anyway, so as they're hugging, lo and behold, the husband's truck or the stepfather's truck jumps the curb, smashing the wife and daughter into the house.
It's like insane.
It's brutal. And he is like asleep at the wheel and like wakes up covered in blood. That's the last we see of him, but it's probably not the last of what happens because at this point, the older brother.
Oh, I'm sure he went out as a demon. I'm sure I'm sure that skittered out all over the place.
Yep.
Because the town is like gone when we go there at the end of the movie.
And like four people saw it.
Yeah.
Too. So like all those people skitter out.
Yeah.
Remember in 2018 when Border Patrol separated thousands of refugee kids from their parents and then deported the parents back to their home countries, all while keeping the kids in the United States? Well, believe it or not, 6 years later, there are still hundreds of families who haven't been reunified. And although we as a community might feel hopeless at times, I recently learned about an organization called Al Otro Lado, which works to reunify families. They provide holistic, legal, and humanitarian support to refugees, deportees, and other migrants in the U.S. and Tijuana through a multidisciplinary, client-centered, harm reduction-based practice. Since 2018, they've reunited over 100 refugee families ripped apart by Trump's zero tolerance policy. Once reunited, Al Otro Lado helps each family to find legal representation, housing, and the counseling that they need in order to heal and get back on their feet. Imagine having your child ripped from your arms and never knowing when you would see them again. We can't let family separations go on. If you're like me and you believe that all families belong together, then join me in supporting Al Otro Lado and donate today. You can find the link to donate to Al Otro Lado in the description of this episode or go to gum.fm/charity and donate today. You can also consider volunteering with the organization, which offers opportunities that are both in-person and virtual. The best way to get involved is by filling out an application on their website at alotrolado.org/volunteer. Again, that's alotrolado.org/volunteer.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Anyway, he meets up with the younger brother. They pick up the grandmother. So their mom.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, great, you brought the grandkids. How'd you work that out with your ex-wife? She never lets me see that. And she's just like completely oblivious. And they're like, mom, there's a demon. It's loose in the city. It's going to kill everybody. Yeah. The Rottens are here. And she's just like, no.
You and your crazy kids with your funny stories.
Oh, no. So they drive out of town. As they're doing that, she talks to Santino about all of the different rules for Rottens, which are very similar to rules for some other cryptids that we'll talk about in fun facts. But also, while they were trying to escape, Yair saw the truck hit the mom and the little girl.
Mm-hmm.
So Yair is agitated, and we will come back to it a little bit later. But they stop at a gas station trying to find Yair apple ice cream, which, by the way, we see the apple ice cream later in the movie.
Yeah, we
and
do.
I want some. It looked amazing. I was like green apple flavor.
I've never had apple ice cream. Yeah, so I'm down for
it. Me neither. This sounds so good. I was like, ooh, and it's in like this giant styrofoam. I was all for it. I was like, yeah. Anyway, they didn't have it. But they also don't have any money. So they're kind of stranded. And so the younger brother is like, I know this lady. She'll help us out. She's dealt with stuff like this and she'll probably give us money. So they get there and she is absolutely creepy creeps and I love her instantly.
Oh, yeah. She's the one who really knows what's going on, you know?
Yes. She knows the truth.
Yeah.
The Illuminati. The Illuminati?
Ooh, Paige. I love it. That's so fun.
Anyway.
Also, does that make her like, I want her movie. Like,
yes.
I want to know like what, like, cause she has like this insane, awesome story and she's the reason the town hasn't had to deal with Rottens for the past 12 years. Like her and
yes.
I think maybe her husband,
I think she's a widow, but like something. Yeah.
Yeah. But like, she was definitely a cleaner, right? Like she says that like,
yes.
She's just too old to be able to do it anymore. Her reflexes aren't where they needed to be or whatever, you know? So she has like this whole awesome backstory and then she dies because this motherfucker has no self-control, and like I would be so mad.
There's also an implication that the younger brother had a relationship with her at some point, but we don't get more about that either.
I was gonna bring that up. I was like, did Pedro's brother have sex with the old lady? Because
I think so. Pedro, and what is Pedro's brother's name? I feel like I keep losing track of the two brothers' names.
Pedro's brother is the most logical of the people, and
yes,
sometimes she was his teacher, so like I think it was a college time situation, a good form.
Okay,
you know what I'm saying?
Okay.
Hello, Mrs. Robinson.
They obviously maintain a professional relationship after that. To be a cleaner, you got to get dirty. You know what I'm saying?
Sometimes you got to go down to get up. You know what I'm saying?
Lots of bodily fluids.
Stick your sextant in me, you know?
I mean, the last cleaner literally got split in half, guys.
Cleft in twain.
Yeah, but like,
it was the worst case of being cut in half I ever seen.
The last cleaner, he met a wayward magician on the way to the house and was like, I'm going to saw you in two. And the trick failed, the illusion. He actually saw them in half.
It's an illusion, Michael.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, her house has no electricity.
By design, I thought.
By design, because electric lights. Because
she knows better, Paige.
Well, I love that they're like electric lights and the shadows they cast draw the evil in.
Yeah.
Which we saw with some of the antlers and stuff in the other farmhouses.
Yeah.
But Yair won't go inside. And so Pedro has to spend the night with him in the car while his mom tucks Santino in inside and the younger brother talks to, I believe her name was Mitra.
Yeah, I believe it is Mitra. Yeah.
Mitra?
It's M-I-R-T-H-A. I just looked it up. Mirtha.
Anyway, the cleaner lady.
Yeah.
Cleaner lady. They're talking. Everyone kind of retires to bed. And we cut to Yair and Pedro sleeping in the car. And who should swipe a bloody handprint across the car? But Sabrina, his ex-wife.
Yeah.
Da-na-na.
She's here for her kids.
And her face is messed up.
Oh, yeah.
Well, because she's a demon and you took the thing she wanted most.
Well, and also you try and look good after your husband smashed you into the wall with a Jeep.
Yeah.
Or truck or whatever it was.
Truck-secutioner. Oh. So.
Ooh.
Been there.
Yeah.
Let me flip the sign.
Zero days.
Oh, did I bring it up? She said truck-secutioner.
You joined in. You all joined. You Paige did it. I still have to flip the sign. I'm contractually obligated.
I guess that's fair. Technically, this one's on Paige, but I do respect that you do have to flip the sign because the topic of me having sex with the truck that killed my brother came up.
Use protection.
That's what I thought of when we watched the film West Side Story.
Is it?
Yep.
Yeah, I think that is where that originated. I don't remember why.
Holy
because Maria
shit.
Has sex with the brother of the guy who kills her
that's
brother.
That's what it is. Oh. That's why.
God, I forgot that. Why. I guess that's technically a Romancing the Pod bit then. I didn't realize that.
West Side Story is one of my favorite Romancing the Pod episodes because I'm trying to watch a musical that you two love and I'm like, why does Maria sleep with the guy who murders her brother?
That would like be like Todd sleeping with the truck that killed,
who killed his brother.
Oh no.
It would be like
so
that,
sorry.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry.
That tailpipe though, you know, Mikey?
Nice and warm.
It always blows.
Oh.
Ooh, Sabrina, the ex-wife, comes in and gets Santino from the grandmother. And the grandmother's just like, I took sleeping pills and I don't know what's going on, but oh, hey, ex-wife, how's it going? Because Pedro did not tell anyone that the ex-wife is dead. Maybe he should have included that detail earlier.
Pedro, is his name Pedro? Yes.
I thought it was Pedro.
The main guy with the bushy beard?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty sure that's Pedro. Yeah, his name was Ezequiel Rodriguez.
I'm not a fan of him as a person. Or the way he operates.
I think one of the themes of the movie is self-control. I think it shows that with Ruiz. Because Ruiz is told not to do something he does and it goes badly. I think Pedro is the same. I think he continues the theme of like no self-control in these types of situations.
Well, he's also a really bad communicator. And before all this, he tried to murder his entire family.
I mean, yes.
Yeah. Also, the younger brother, by the way, is Jimmy or Jaime. As they pronounce it.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it is Pedro then?
Yes, Pedro and Jaime.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So Jaime comes out and is like, hey, something is up. Grandma's freaking out. So Pedro comes inside and the grandma's like, I thought it was Sabrina, but it is not Sabrina, but she took him up there.
Yeah.
And so he goes upstairs and Sabrina, or rather demon Sabrina, has Santino. And she's just like, I'm taking my kids where you can't hurt them anymore. And then she jumps off the balcony.
Guys, when she jumped off the balcony holding her son that was technically alive.
Yes.
And she's not, and like he, the little kid, as he's hugging his mom, is like, it's cold, mom. Like, why are you cold? Yeah. Like, why is your body cold? And she's like, don't worry about it. I'm going to peace out the window now. And like,
yes,
it's insane.
The worst part about dating someone or being married and stuff is like when it's that time of the month when they bleed all over the car. And, you know, it's just the worst.
You know what? Shouldn't have left that car in my blood path.
How many times have you said that, Paige? You know,
at least once a month.
I will say when she took the kid and got on the balcony and jumped, I like got out of my chair because I was like, oh, my God, this is too much.
I know. I already thought nothing was safe. And then this like amped it up even a little bit more. Like,
well, this scene coming up where you come back.
It's the one coming up. That's the one that I was like, yes. Oh, my God, it could not get worse. So they go down below the balcony. There's no bodies. They're not there. But at this point, Mirtha and Jimmy and Pedro are like, hey, shit's fucked up hospital. And like, yeah, we need to figure this out. So like, one of us needs to go after her. But then clearly the rotten is jumping and following us. So we need to go to where it's at.
Yeah.
Because he's like, by the way, we moved it. And she's like, you fucking idiot. Okay, fine. We'll go and find it. So they kind of split up, but because they can't use electric lights, they're having to drive and like turn the headlights on and off.
That was an effective way to make like a little jump scare happen. It's not like a super bad jump scare, but it did sort of get me a little bit. Because every time he flashes the light, you're like, please don't be there. Please don't be there. And then boom, it's there. And you're like, ah, shit.
That's also, I don't know why this is like a fear of my, like, you know how you have, everyone has things that freak them out a little bit.
Yeah.
My fear is driving at night on small roads where there aren't a lot of street lights. So it's just your headlights and then just illuminating something terrifying in the headlights.
Yeah.
We, like, a couple months back, we were driving home from the bay, and part of the Grapevine was closed. We had to go around, and it was this, like, one lane road with turnbacks at, like, 2 a.m. through trees and stuff. And I was like, there is going to be a werewolf. Like, I know it. I know it is. I don't know why. Or a zombie.
Paige, I once played a show in, like, at a rural, let's just say it was at a rural place. And coming back down the mountain that we played on, it was raining and it was like a windy road. It was paved, but it was a windy road. And I come like whipping around the turn and there's just like a big ass wolf in the road. And it wasn't like scary permanently. It wasn't like a bad situation, but man, did I scream like an 8-year-old child.
Oh.
I was so scared. And then of course I was like, oh, it's just a wolf. And he like trotted on his way.
Yeah.
And I like continued down the mountain. But like, I was glad I was in the car alone.
The scariest one I ever had. So I did my first few years of college at UC Irvine, and we lived off campus. So I lived in the sorority house for a while, but then we moved off campus, and our apartment was right on the other side of a nature preserve that is part of the college. And it's like a little weird swamp and you have to drive through it to get to campus.
Uh-uh.
But at night it would get really, really foggy. And so like headlights would like illuminate the fog, but it was just like only a few feet in front of you. Now, it's also not a great distance. So like people would walk back and forth from campus to those apartments
Sure. All
the time. And so one night, it's super late, I'm driving and my headlights illuminate a lone figure shuffling.
Ooh, yeah.
No, thank
down
you.
The sidewalk. And as I pass slowly, I look back in my mirror and he has what looks like blood all down the front of his shirt and his mouth.
I'm out.
And I'm like, oh my God, is it a zombie? Like, I just like,
yeah.
And I was like, okay, before we call 911, let's turn around and get another look and make sure that we're not imagining things, you know, or whatever. So I flipped around, drove back down the other way so I would see him like walking towards the car. And it was definitely just a freshman who had thrown up all over themselves. but for like a hot 20 seconds, I was like, zombie. Like, oh no. But yeah, so this is a personal fear. This was very scary.
Yeah.
And of course, he comes upon Sabrina walking with the baby. And as we he drives past, because she just doesn't even notice the car. She pretends like it's not even there. Couldn't care less.
Yeah, she's busy eating Santino's brain out of his head like it's the Dune popcorn bucket from the movie theater.
Yeah, because as we turn around, she's just reaching into his head and eating brains. He's very dead.
Yeah.
Very dead.
It looks very graphic.
It's very graphic. It's, and it's not the gore so much as the emotional implication of what is happening.
Oh, yeah.
That is so disturbing about it.
He's essentially watching his former sister-in-law eat his nephew's brains out of his head while just like casually walking down the street.
Just walking around.
That's insane.
Just like iPads do to our children now.
Oh, wow, boomer. That was insane. Yeah, exactly like that. Yeah,
exactly. So he then basically comes back to the house like, oh, I found her. You don't want to find her. Basically.
Yeah, like, but he kills her though, right?
He hits her with the car.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He hits her with the car. But while that's happening,
he loses his emotions on that level.
Yes.
I honestly thought he was going to end up being bad because of it. And there is sort of no real reason that like our two main characters aren't bad. Like they don't turn bad. Because they witness a lot of bad shit happening.
Except that Mithra says there are people like us who are immune.
Sure, but like, how does she know that they're one of those people?
Well, I think that goes back to their previous relationship, perhaps.
Oh, you think because Jaime was having sex with the
maybe
the lady,
I don't
she
know.
Like cast a spell of protection on both of them?
Or she just, we don't know what happened to them before this, so we don't know. Anyway, he hits her with the car. It's brutal. It's bloody. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Mithra and the other brother are driving out to where they left the body, and it's gone. There's a blanket there, but the only other thing they see is a sign that says Escuela Rural, which is basically like rural school, like farm school.
Yeah.
And she says the line that made me know that Mikey would love this movie. And that was, evil loves children. and children
love evil.
I was like, what?
I was like, it's so true.
In order to make this a full-blown Mikey movie, Pedro, like, at one point would have to, like, cock his arms like Henry Cavill in that Mission Impossible trailer and just start decking these kids as they're, like, trying to, like, kill them.
He had an opportunity.
He did.
But this dumb guy believes these obviously evil children throughout this film.
Exactly.
They had it coming.
They did have it coming, Paige.
I tell you what I would have done in that schoolhouse. I would have unleashed hell to protect that lady in that schoolhouse.
Yeah, but I think that's part of the metaphor of the movie, of like the lack of self-control causing worse situations.
I don't take suggestions from kids bleeding from the mouth. Okay, that's a dumb rule to live by.
Hard same.
I don't take suggestions from kids covered in lye for no reason.
Also, that will burn you and burn your skin.
It would if you were alive, Paige, but they're fully ass demoned out.
I know. No, I know. They're fully ass demoned out.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They serve the underworld. So
yeah.
While that's all happening, back at the house, Grandma is sitting in the house. Yair has been outside in the car.
Yeah.
And the grandma's sitting there and Yair just walks into the house. Now, up until this point, Yair has seemed to be largely nonverbal. But Yair walks in and is like, Grandma, can you make me something to eat? It's cold and I don't want to get sick. And she's like, the what? Oh, no. Which I realized we skipped over something very important.
The hands. I was going to bring it up too. Yeah, oh, Paige. Yeah. Agreed.
So, rewind with us briefly.
Yeah.
A few scenes back, before they left the house, Mithra is like, hey, I'm pretty sure Yair is a rotten. And they're like, no, what are you? That's, he's just like that. This is, I realize maybe that you're not as familiar with Yair and who he is. And she's like, I need you to trust me. I understand that he has autism. However, demons can still get into people like him, and even though they struggle to control their minds as quickly as other people, they still can, and you can tell because of the hands and feet. And then they show his hands and feet, and his hands are full ass backwards.
Yeah.
Backward hands.
Yeah.
Anyway, so he walks into the house and is just like, hey, Grandma, make me some food. And the grandma's like, oh no, oh my God.
He's like, where's my snack pack? More or less. And he has been nonverbal the whole time. Like,
time for me to have some grandma ice cream.
The problem is he does eat his grandmother. Like, that is what happens.
At this point in the movie, I was like, this goes one of two ways.
Oh, did you think the demonic possession was going to cure his autism?
No. What? No.
Because I was like, don't do that. That would be weird.
No, I thought either one of two things would happen. Either what happens in the movie would happen, which we'll get to in just a bit, or they would come home to grandma covered in blood, and she's like, he was rotten, I had to do it. And I was like, it could go either way.
I think because they wanted to go full-ass nihilism with it,
yeah.
Granny had to die.
Yeah.
Because she's been like the optimist the whole time.
Yep. Anyway, meanwhile, Mithra and Pedro find that school and they walk through and there's kids sitting there, but it's nighttime. Kids shouldn't be there. It's nighttime.
Right? And kids like show up.
Yeah.
Throughout the course of the evening, which is weird.
And she's like, hey, yo, often children will protect rottens. Because, like, they trust them too much or whatever.
Yeah.
And so they're trying to find the rotten. And the kids are like, it's at my house. No, it's at my house. Go over here. Like, trying to draw them away from the place.
They did sort of, like, no, I'm Spartacus, where the demon was.
Yes.
And it was, like, in the schoolhouse. Like, we find out a little bit later, like, it's there. So they're, like, trying to, like, throw him off. And, like, the moment you realize the kids are lying is when you stop believing the kids.
Yes.
But he continues to believe the kids way past. We all know they're evil.
Well, and specifically the one kid who seems conflicted and seems to be telling them the truth and is like, don't shoot him. There's an axe or whatever. And she's just trying to get him to leave the room.
Yes. So they can murder the lady, the cleaner lady.
Because Mithra smells him. And they realize that he's under the stage, piled under the dead bodies of all the parents. So he has to, like, unearth him. And she's like, pull him out. And I'm like, how? Like, physically, how? Like,
yeah.
There's no way as one person he's strong enough. So he goes and leaves to get the axe in hoping that he can either kill the rotten or it'll help him get more of the stage open. But, of course, the axe is gone.
Yeah. Or perhaps was never there.
I think was maybe never there. And he turns back around. They've locked him out of the room as they just emotionlessly and calmly murder Mithra with a hammer. Just hammer to the face.
It's brutal.
It is fucking brutal.
And you see like her scalp like crack open and fall away and her brain get exposed and then them keep hitting her as they're dragging her out. It is so freaky. I hated it so much.
So freaky. He finally breaks the glass, which also I was like, break the glass, because they get two or three more hits on her with that hammer when he could have broken the glass and got through anyway.
I honestly thought, okay, so I didn't realize it was going to have the nihilist ending. I thought the moment we all realized that like they're lying, which is like way before where we are now. Like that's,
yeah.
Anyway, like that's when they find the rotten guy under the stage, you know, right there.
Right, right.
I thought at that point, because they have established now that at least the cleaner lady and Pedro are immune,
right,
that they were going to start blasting kids. Like they were going to start shooting those kids to death. Because they're immune from the trauma projection or whatever causes the person to go crazy. So, like, I was very sad we didn't get that. But I was sad for Mikey because I thought, like, we were going to get, like, Pedro just beating the shit out of kids.
For sure.
I thought so, too. He gave up.
Because before they even goes into the house, like, he does punch that child a few times.
He does.
I was going to, if I was in this situation, I wouldn't let that lady get gacked without a fight.
No, absolutely not. No, but that's the self-control metaphor stuff, I think.
And then two, a demon child coming out of another man to walk towards me, covered in blood that I know is evil.
We haven't even gotten to that part, Mikey.
Well, I'm just saying, I would have gone down swinging. That I'm going to go down swinging in these situations. Like, I would have fought as many of those children until that demon killed me, you know?
Well, and what happens is her machinery is broken.
We appreciate your sacrifice, Mikey.
Sure. Her machinery is broken. So when he breaks back in, he doesn't know how to put together. He doesn't even know what it does. So he just grabs the heaviest looking piece and caves in the skull of the rotten, who falls back below the stage. And rising up out of the stage, because I'm sure they didn't have the budget for something weirder, is the bloody demon baby, who gets up and then it like marks Pedro's head, but then seemingly just walks off through the field with the children, which is a haunting visual in its own. But also I turned to Jake and I was like, what if this is a prequel for Children of the Corn? Right?
Well, Pedro just stands on his knees and lets all these kids walk over him.
It's crazy.
Yep. He returns back. He and his brother come back and their mom is gone. And the fact that they aren't immediately like, where's grandma? They don't seem to question it.
They don't, which is concerning, I think.
Well, she's older, you know.
Yeah. But they give Yair his apple ice cream. And Yair seems back to the state that we have seen him in most of the movie.
Yeah. So, like, I mean, you do sort of wonder, like, okay, so the demon won because it, like, was born and then got away.
Right.
But, like, does that sort of release the town from its possession?
No.
I know, but you're, like, sort of wondering that because, like, his son is sort of back to normal, quote normal, what we're used to.
Yeah.
And he's just eating his ice cream, so we think.
Right. Then he starts to choke on his ice cream. The dad recalls stories of someone choking and vomiting and barfing up the body parts of their family.
Yeah.
And so he starts to kind of try and reach into Yair's mouth to relieve the choking.
Ugh.
And he pulls out large bloody chunks of hair and the grandmother's necklace.
Oh.
It's very visceral. It's tough to watch.
Oh, God. I almost threw up during that. I almost threw up.
I'm surprised you didn't.
Ugh.
Yeah, I don't like swallowing hairs.
Mm-mm. God, yeah.
Meanwhile, Jimmy goes out to the barn to see that other kid because he notices one of the bullets is missing. And the kid is like, hey, I killed the cleaner. I cut him into pieces because the voices in my head told me to. And then I ate some of him. And then I went home and killed and ate my mother.
Yeah.
And so Pedro, it is implied, probably kills that kid. We don't see it. It happens off screen. But he comes back to kind of the courtyard of the house where Pedro is on his knees, openly weeping.
Yeah.
Because he now realizes that his mother is dead and his son has eaten her. And I think he probably off screen killed Yair.
Yeah, I think so too.
I think he had to.
Yes. And we don't know how.
Yeah. But it would have just continued the cycle out, right?
Right.
And it's clear that child is now a demon child.
Yes.
Because of the eye contact look of like,
yes.
are you buying this act?
Right.
Right. And I think so, like, for sure. I think he kills him.
Yes. And basically, the end of the movie is Pedro and Jaime hugging each other as Pedro screams in anguish.
Yeah.
And does admit that he did try to kill himself and all of them.
Yeah.
And now that he has effectively, air quotes, gotten his wish, it is more horrifying than he could have ever imagined. And
that's the movie. So having seen the movie, having talked about the movie, what did you guys think about When Evil Lurks?
I really did like it. I liked it a lot. It's weird and I like it.
I really liked it. I thought it was well made.
Yes.
And different than what we normally see.
Yes.
In a good way.
Yeah, man. Like, I was incredibly frustrated for the first 20-ish minutes of this movie. But like, once you start to get a handle on what's going on, I was like, holy shit, this is great. It almost felt like, it's hard to explain because like I hated a lot of the reasons I was laughing in this movie, but I laughed way more than I should have been laughing.
I think that it goes across a barrier when it kills all of these non-traditional people who would get killed.
Yes.
Yeah, traditionally unkillables.
Yes.
People, when you see stuff like that, it's not something you don't know how to react. And there's not a wrong way.
Yes.
Like gallows humor, laughter.
It literally was me like, oh my God.
Yes.
Milgram's experiment when they're shocking people, uncomfortably laugh too. I think it's totally normal to be like, oh, they killed all the children.
I was like, pregnant woman died, dog died, bunch of kids fucking die. Like old lady dies, like all the people that like normally survive. Like, no.
Yeah.
No. The two men who started off this movie survive.
Yep.
That's typically it. Like, and everyone else dies. It's crazy. It's normally like the other way around.
It's dark. It's a dark movie, which I don't traditionally like, but it was really cool. I want to see his other movies now. It really made me want to see those movies.
Yeah, I really want to see
them. I do think he'll work forever because of this. For sure.
It was very easy on the eyes, that film.
Oh, yeah. Really well done.
What was?
The movie.
Do you mean like cinematically?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree. I think they did a really good job with sort of everything. I don't know how they got that goat to do that, but man, I was like, what the fuck is going on? I've never seen a goat walk towards a shotgun and be like, you won't do
it. Come at me, bro.
Come on. What are you going to do?
Pull that trigger, you pussy.
I know. I was like, oh, shit. I mean, but I think the whole time the Rotten is trying to get them to kill him because then that's what...
It makes him stronger. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So I understood eventually when they explain it why that happened. And I was like, oh, my God, this is so great. Man, still super fucking scary movie, though.
Yes.
I just think it's really well done. Anyway,
mm-hmm.
Paige, do you have any fun facts for us?
I do.
Well, hit us with your fun facts. Evil
Gross
Lurks,
stuff, fun facts.
Oh, yeah.
So I'll start off with this. During a post-premiere audience Q&A at Fantastic Fest, the director, Damien Rugna, said that he got the idea for When Evil Lurks from a series of news stories about farm pesticides in his native Argentina, causing widespread health issues. And I did look up what pesticides it was, and it was Roundup. He suggests that corporate apathy about workers' health and the way the issue occurred out in the middle of nothing, where it's easy for profiteers and city dwellers to ignore the impact of their choices, started him thinking about the idea of lurking evils given free rein to spread. Which I think very obvious in the movie. I think he nailed that metaphor. He did it.
Yeah, that's crazy. Roundup, I think, is Monsanto, but like my granddad.
Monsanto discovered it, yeah.
Yeah. My granddad worked for a company called Ciba Geigy, and like that's who did it here, like in the U.S.
Yeah.
He was retired when all of the scandal broke, but it happened while he was there.
Glyphosate. Is the chemical.
Glyphosate, yeah.
The generic name.
That's so crazy.
And apparently in Argentina, it has happened specifically in the last decade for soybean plantations.
That sucks.
Yeah.
I mean, it's cool that he included it into the movie, but it sucks that it happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the main traditional folkloric stories that they used when creating the monsters for this movie is the Luz Mala, which is basically a glowing ball of light that follows and passes from person to person, kind of like a possession.
Sure.
So he views this movie as structured like a Greek tragedy that begins with our character fleeing from their own demons, but at the same time, from demons, actual demons that are pursuing them. And it's about how madness can spread, how bad ideas can spread and infect, and how you can draw a parallel with fascism in a way, because it's like the media can fill your head and make you think things that are not in your best interest. So the idea of killing kind of the good things in your life and leaving only the bad things to control us, that's kind of the premise of the movie.
Wild. Was that the writer-director?
Yes.
Okay, interesting. I mean, you could see that. I could definitely see that playing out for sure, yes.
Now, one of the other ones, other cryptids that I drew some parallels with is the lobisomem, which is a creature in the folklore of South America. In Brazil, it's traditionally a werewolf, but in some versions, specifically in Argentina and Uruguay, it's a ball of fire or an unusually large pig, or in human form, it's said to look like a normal person except for slightly pointed ears and yellowish pale skin.
Okay.
But there are rules for how you can become a lobisomem. One, being bit. Two, coming into contact with their blood or bodily fluids, which we see in this movie.
Yeah.
Three, being a family's seventh son.
That's a thing in a lot of cultures, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can save yourself from this by making one of his elder brothers his godfather within the church. Four, being the first male son of a couple with seven daughters, in which case the transformation takes place on the son's 13th birthday.
Okay.
Which Yair looks to be about that age, so that's also something to kind of consider there too.
Yeah. Well, and the rotten one is definitely the lady at the beginning's son and would be about that same age. So, yeah.
Sure. It's also punishment for incest, cheating or infidelity, or a woman having sexual relations with a priest. Yeah. But some say that the creature transforms every day in which the moon is in its full phase, much like a werewolf. Others say that it only occurs on Fridays. But either way, in all versions, it transforms at night, usually attacking travelers and animals on the road. So a little bit of borrowed from that and Luz Mala and a couple other things as well.
Cool.
But those are your fun facts.
Well, thank you for those fun facts, Paige. Let's talk a little bit about box office. Now, I don't have a budget for this movie. Looked for it, could not find it anywhere. I would be surprised if it was a lot, but also, like, the film looks great. Like, if you told me that they made this on a shoestring budget and it was $5 million, I'd buy it. But if you could also tell me it was a $20 million movie and I'd buy it because it looks great. Like, but I just couldn't find the budget anywhere. But the movie did premiere in the U.S. at least on October 6th, 2023. It was about 22nd or 23rd in the theaters the week it came out. It was only in 659 movie theaters. It wasn't, I mean, that's a nationwide release, but it wasn't a wide nationwide release. Because, like, for instance, the week it came out, The Exorcist Believer was on like almost 4,000 screens. You know, so right. Like it didn't get that big of a release. Anyway, what do you think it made in its opening weekend, the weekend of October 6th, 2023?
I'm going to say I think this actually did more on streaming than it did wide release, because I remember that's when people really talked about it, was when it was streaming.
Yeah, Shudder picked it up. I'm going to say like a million.
Yeah, I was going to say 2 mil.
Okay, so in its, and remember, it was like 22nd in the first week it came out. So it didn't do quite that well.
Less than that.
Yeah. It was $205,000 roughly.
Yikes.
But guys, it honestly fell out of the theaters pretty quickly. It was only in theaters for 4 weeks. It was in 659 theaters in its first week. It dropped to 330 theaters in its second week. And then it was in less than 100 theaters for its last 2 weeks. It just didn't get a really like great box office push. I didn't hear about this movie until it was already on Shudder.
Yeah.
But I do feel like once it got on Shudder, that's when sort of everyone started hearing about it, which to me makes me think, like, if you had $15 million to invest in this movie, getting like a trailer release that you would see on like YouTube pre-roll ads and shit like that, it would have made good amount of money in the U.S.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Because it is that quality of movie, I should say, you know?
Yeah.
It's not like your normal produced for Shudder kind of movie.
Yeah.
And I mean that for like even Netflix. I'm not trying to talk shit about Shudder. Like, it's better than that.
Yeah, not just produced for streaming. It's better than most, yeah.
Yeah, that's probably the better way of saying it, yeah. Anyway, so the total it made in the theaters, and this includes a little over $1 million internationally, puts it up at a $1.6 million worldwide, And of course, it was just last year. So the dollars are the same, more or less. So yeah, $1.6 million would have made in the box office. But that's your box office. So Mike, you want to hit us with a scary scale?
Yeah. Our scary scale is a scale of 1 to 10 how scary we found the film. Our one example is Ghostbusters. Our 10 example is Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Paige.
I'm going to give this a 6. For me.
Wow. Okay.
I actually thought it was going to be higher because I'm going to give it a 6. I thought Paige was going to give it a little bit higher rating.
No, 6 is right around where I have like Paranormal Activity 3. And okay. I'm like, yeah, about that. Okay. 6.
That's fair. Yeah. That's fair. Yeah.
I'm going to go 1.
That's fair. Wow. If it's okay. Not your type of scare, because yeah. It's a very specific scare type for me.
It is.
Man, if this had had jump scares in it, it would have been a 10 for me, for sure.
So I really wanted us to watch it because I thought it had jump scares and Paige's stuff, and I thought it was going to scare both of you, and that would have made it really fun for me. But just getting Paige is hard enough. So, like, that's I feel good enough. About it. Yeah.
I mean, it's still got, we gave it the same rating, Mikey.
Yeah.
Like, you don't seem scared enough, Todd.
I don't think this will stick with me that much, and I think that's largely because there was no religion in this movie. And I only mean that to say, like, I grew up very religious, so that's the shit that, like, really scares me and sticks with me and shit. And there is no religion in this movie.
That is true. Or rather, I would say it is divorced from our American Western religious ideals, which I think does apply to me as well. However, this will stick with me. I had nightmares last night of, like, that poor little girl under the table.
Fuck,
so, like,
yes, that's
yeah. Like, the callous brutality of the killings in this film are what get me. 100%.
Yeah, man. All right. Well, yeah.
That's our scary scale.
Yeah, man. Okay, so this week you guys made us watch When Evil Lurks. What are you making us watch next week?
So our next film, because this is Terrify Todd Foreign Horror Month.
It's a double whammy for me. I'm scared and I'm going to have to read.
There you go. Even scarier. We're going to go with The Wailing from 2016 from South Korea.
Okay. I've heard of this movie. I don't know anything about it really. And I've heard it in the sense of a lot of people have said you should make Todd watch The Wailing. And I'm like, why do you think that Mikey and Paige get the DMs on the Horror Virgin accounts? Like, of course it's me that runs those accounts, guys. Stop telling them to make me watch stuff on that account. It's never going to get to Mikey and Paige because I'm not going to tell them how to scare me.
Paige, we should this week look for a third film and then debate it on our text messages away from Todd.
Sounds good.
I want to find something to scare you specifically, Todd.
I mean, this movie didn't not scare me, Mikey, but I understand what you're saying. This doesn't have jump scare vibe to it.
I don't like watching you throw up. I like watching you get freaked out.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't throw up. So thankfully watching this movie was dry this time. Unlike, what was it? The Audition where I threw up on the episode?
Oh, yeah, that's right. You did throw up during Audition. But to make you feel better, think about her throwing that foot against that sliding glass door.
It's not unusual to cut a foot off with razor wire. Ba-na-na-na-na-na. Like, she just looks so happy. She's like doing this insane thing.
She's just like, great, a foot. It's so funny. I'm sorry. Shouldn't be laughing, but it's hilarious. Anyway, The Wailing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Shit. I forgot what we were doing. Yeah. So watch The Wailing for next week. So, Mikey, do you have a review for us to read?
I'm looking one up now.
Well, while you look one up, let me go ahead and read one of our Spotify comments that came in on our most recent They Cloned Tyrone episode. And this one is off our They Cloned Tyrone episode. And it's from Abs, A-B-B-S. And it's directly to you, Paige. And they say, to Paige, skip Zaxby's. Go to Cane's instead. You'll thank me. A Louisianan.
I mean, we have Cane's here.
I think that's why you asked if I was in the South where I go. Because you do have Cane's and we have Zaxby's.
Yeah.
But, like,
we have
listen.
Cane's too.
Yeah, Cane's also slaps.
It's fine. I just, you know, I've had it. I wanted the new.
Right.
I do love Cane's, though.
Either way, Abs, thank you for the recommendation. I will definitely enjoy me some Cane's again at some point. Mikey, do you have a review for us to read?
Yeah, Boydler.
What does Boydler have to say?
This is the newest review that I can see on my little thing. It says, the heroes we need in these trying times.
Thank you so much. That's very kind.
The Horror Virgin is without a doubt the best horror movie recap show out there.
I'm biased, but I agree.
Todd, I don't listen to anybody else or me. So whatever. If that's it, what you're into. Todd, Paige, and Mikey have the chemistry most hosts only dream of. They play off each other as if they've been friends their whole lives.
It does feel like we have been at this point.
It does feel like we are siblings at this point. I'd be honest with you.
Exactly. I talked to you both more than almost everyone in my life.
I know that we're all close because I feel more comfortable fighting with y'all than I do people I know.
And I think that that's what they mean when
that's,
the chemistry
stuff. It's a sibling
stuff.
Level where
because,
I can
yeah,
like...
Yeah, exactly. Because like we can be so mean and so like funny mean to each other, like that kind of thing. Anyway.
Okay, so it goes into why they like all of us. It starts with Todd, boisterous, overenthusiastic horror version who's not afraid to share his vulnerabilities with the world.
I think that's a very fair first two adjectives, and I apologize to you both.
Paige, the witty comic who elevates the conversation. Her knowledge of the industry and ability to improvise are amazing. Her personality and insights help carry this show to the top. Agreed. Hard
hell
agree.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Mikey, P-word, P-word, P-word.
Is that seriously all it says for you?
No, he goes, okay, just
okay,
kidding.
Okay.
Mikey's humble soul is the glue that holds the pod together. I don't know about that.
It's clear people don't know the real you, Mikey.
His perspective as a mental health professional and compassion shown when difficult topics are discussed
hell
help
yeah.
make the bad parts of life a little less bad, and that's pretty good.
That is pretty
I hope
good.
These three know what a joy it is listening to them enjoy their time together. It's like hanging out with your own friends. Obviously, they all have busy lives, but if y'all could come up with a D&D campaign that we can all come along on, that would be amazing. And you know, you could get Todd to pass out or vomit.
Almost did in this episode. I would 100% do a D&D campaign with both of you guys.
Yes, we have tons of time. Anyway,
if
thanks
we had
for what
time,
you do.
I would do.
It's incredible. All the respect in the world, Rhino. 5 stars.
Rhino, thank you so much for that truly awesome 5-star review. And if you want to have Mikey read your 5-star review and me read your Spotify comment, leave us a Spotify comment or 5-star review and we'll do that.
So guys, if you like this show but want to hear this power thruple on another movie review show about romance and romantic comedies, check out Romancing the Pod, where Mikey, Paige, and I break down and make fun of romantic movies. It's a lot of fun, guys. Check it out. If you want to follow us on social, please do. We are at Horror Virgin or online at horrorvirgin.com. If you want to follow us all individually, you can do that as well. Paige is at Paige Wesley on Twitter or Rampage Wesley everywhere else, including TikTok. Mikey is at mrandolph24 and I am at Todd J. Awesome. If you like the show so much and you want to help financially support it, please do by going to patreon.com/horrorvirgin where you can get a lot of great levels and a lot of great stuff like bonus episodes, director's cut episodes where they're a little bit longer and you get them actually a day earlier than the regular feed drop. We do a lot of great things like listener requests and stuff like that. So guys, check out the Patreon and help support the show.
If you want to financially support me, but not Todd, just look me up on Venmo.
If you can't financially support the show, that's understandable. That's fine. But if you want to hang out with us on the daily, join the Facebook group at facebook.com/group/horrorvirgin. We also link it like once a week. So just find it there and join the awesome Facebook group. Literally, we're in there talking every day. It's awesome. And guys, we got a P.O. box. So if you want to send us some love letters or whatever you might send to a P.O. box, it's actually not a P.O. box. It's like a regular street address. It's pretty awesome. It's 6688 Nolensville Road, number 108-34, Brentwood, Tennessee, 37027. So send us some stuff.
Yeah.
And if you want to check out our Twitch stream, we're at twitch.tv/ToddAwesome, where we will be playing horror video games. So if you have always wondered what it would be like to watch me get scared, you can now do that on Twitch while I play these horror games. It's twitch.tv/ToddAwesome, guys. Check it out. It's a lot of fun for you. Not a lot of fun for me. This episode was brought to you by Tia, and Tia's teenager's been driving her crazy. So how is Tia's teenager driving her crazy this week, guys?
She's loves evil, and evil loves her.
Yep.
That is dialogue from this movie. So yeah, that works. Tia, may want to watch out for, what do they call it? Evil or whatever. This episode also brought to you by Jonathan, and Jonathan wants me to make you guys watch some videos, so I'm gonna steal your screens right now and make you watch this video. This time it was this is John Oliver.
Oh yay.
Oh shit, I watched this. Have you guys seen this?
Oh yes.
Where they offered Justice Thomas $1 million a year.
Yes, just to
leave
the
Supreme Court. Wild. Not only do they do that, guys, they like offer him a mobile home. What is it? A motor coach?
Yeah. Until you or I die.
Yes. Yeah.
Best they can tell, this is somehow legal.
Well, because Justice Thomas has been like given a lot of quote loans
of
millions of dollars that have been forgiven and shit like that. Anyway, like Harlan Crow bought his mom's house for like an exorbitant price and lets his mom just live there?
Yes.
How wild would it be if he actually did resign, though, and take the deal? Like, of course he won't, but that would be, like, so, it'd be amazing.
That'd be great.
It would be great as well. But, Jonathan, thank you so much for that video. And, John Oliver, thank you so much for the offer. Would you take that deal?
$1 million a year? Yeah.
I would just use that segment as, like, a starting point when I take future bribes.
Be like, oh, you're only offering a few hundred thousand?
John Oliver gave me a milli a year and this dope-ass motor coach. Anyway.
A milli a year, a milli a there. Sorry, that was a Lil Wayne joke. Thank you.
But Jonathan, thank you so much for that video and the support. And we now return you to another episode of
The Patreonicles.
Welcome back to the computer stuff that we're doing. Boom.
This is the Patreonicals drawn together season, because it's drawn, not Tron.
D-R-O-N, not D-R-A-W-N.
Exactly.
Where should we start? Edward has his computer. I forgot where I put everybody.
It was revealed at the end of the last episode that Mikey, everything's a simulation, and Edward, who is in Laura's class, has to go release them all from where they are.
Yeah. So Edward, he was able to like touch a glitch thing, and him and Laura, they jump simulations.
Oh, Mikey, his pen was spinning in his hand and it was like glowing red.
Sure. Whatever we do. They're in a new simulation now.
Yeah. Perfect.
He's going around and he finds Madeline and Sexcalibur, who is a man wearing a power glove, and Vixen with the laser gun, but they're in like a really peaceful